Good morning. I'm going to get us started because 20 minutes goes awfully fast, especially when you're talking. So hopefully I will not be talking a mile a minute for you guys. But we are going to be talking about the loss of a pet. I'm assuming because you're in here, either you've experienced this or you're an animal lover like myself, or you're trying to figure out us crazy animal lovers by being here. So welcome. Do you know that 9% of people put their pets in their wills? Think about that for a minute. 9% of Americans, I don't even know what that would be in other countries, but 9% of Americans put their pets in their wills. 68% of Americans have pets in their homes. Even recently, when Joan Rivers passed away, we heard reports that she left her $150 million estate to her daughter and to her four dogs. Which speaks to the value that some of us take in loving our pets. I'm going to read a list of crazy things that we tend to do for our pets, and I'll plead the fifth on how many I fall under, and ask you guys to think about which ones apply to you. Before doing that, though, one person said it's an epidemic, most likely caused by a yet-to-be-discovered virus, because no sane person would make such a sacrifice of their time and money and energy. The things we do for our pets: have conversations with our pets, leave music or the TV on during the day to keep them company, allow them to sleep in bed with us, sleep in all kinds of uncomfortable positions so as not to disturb them, forgo activities like things like vacuuming so that we won't disturb our sleeping pet, sitting with our pet while it eats its food so it won't be lonely. We turn on faucets so the cat or dog can drink out of them. We mix strange concoctions for our pet meals, allow pets to eat off our plates, play dress up, wear matching clothes. I don't do those things, by the way. Dye fur, paint, nails, take them to pet salons, or even taxidermy your pet. Which speaks a lot to the ways in which we find meaning in pets. And in order to really talk about why the loss of a pet is meaningful, it's important to say why are pets meaningful in general. They are at the door waiting for you when you arrive home. They love you regardless of your mood, your financial status, your appearance, or your choices. They don't judge you for your cleanliness of the home or where you live. They make you happy and laugh. They help you relax and calm down. They don't lie or deceive or betray you. They don't argue or talk back to you. They don't care about the mistakes you make. They give you affection and loyalty and companionship, and they bring joy and warmth and happiness to a home. So we can see how, for many reasons and for many people, they see it as an unconditional, loving, uncomplicated relationship. And the danger at times for us is that those can take the place of human relationships, right? Because we see them as so much easier or uncomplicated. We also we'll take a look at what people say about pets. Wouldn't anyone want a partner who worshiped them, always welcomed them home enthusiastically, ate gratefully at every meal, was content with cheap outings and presents, and gave lifelong loyalty and protection? I read that a large number of U.S. women wish they could marry their dogs. My cat, in many ways, was a baby substitute. I'm 41 and a spinster and need to be needed. I got the cat during a very stressful period of my life. It's been proved that stroking an animal lowers your blood pressure. It makes us feel human. They're our best therapy that one could have. A pet is a person with fur. An animal is a person with fur. We see over and over again the kind of value that we place on our animals and our pets, sometimes in unhealthy ways, right? Sometimes we elevate pets to be of equal value in human relationships in ways they shouldn't be. However, that's not what I'm here to talk about, though I believe that happens and that that's something to be dealt with. What I believe we need to consider really is how there is value to owning a pet. So just think for a minute how we are called to have a distinct charge to care for creation, don't we? From the beginning of Genesis, we're called to rule over, to care for and tend to creation in ways that are consistent with the way the Creator cares for us. There is some level of natural mutuality in our relationship with pets. We see how they benefit from our care and we benefit from theirs. They bring out our humanity, our desire to care and protect for another. They make us more responsible, more empathic. They require work and effort and attention and compassion, and perhaps they make us even a little less selfish by having them. Of course, again, we have to consider how we care for them, and that in many, many ways where we live in the danger of them becoming surrogates for human relationships. That said, I'm just going to tell you some stories about some of the pets we've owned. So you see here Titus. Titus was a street cat on Philadelphia when we found him. He came walking up to my husband and I, just very sweet and talkative and meowing, completely emaciated. He had scratches all over them. He looked like he had been beat up by multiple people or animals, yet just very friendly and kind. And we stood there for a while trying to figure out, what do we do with this cat? He can't be a street cat. He obviously looked like one, but he couldn't be one because he was just so friendly. So we ended up bringing him home, as we did with many of our pets. Along with that, we had another cat. Well, I should back up a minute and say my husband and I, when we got married, had a dog and a cat that we brought into our marriage. Not to mention we were adopting two children, buying a house, and planning a wedding in less than 3 months. So that gives you a little insight into the low home. And somewhere in that mix, I can't even remember how we got the bunny, but a bunny appeared in our house at some point. And the bunny thought it was a cat, or we thought the cats were bunnies. And so we had a bunny that ran around the house with the cats, that would chase the cats around the house. We later got birds that I'll tell you about in a minute, but I distinctly remember a day when I walked into a room, and there's a bird cage in the corner, and the cats are there looking under the bird cage, and the bunny's there looking at the cats. And I'm thinking, what is going on? So I look under the bird cage, and there is a little mouse with beady eyes staring out from under the bird cage at the cats, at the bunny, and I thought, wow, we really have gone to the dogs. So we began collecting animals, for good or ill. Keisha was one of the dogs we had. Keisha was very much my child in my single years. So she was a dog I got after I graduated my master's program. Was about 15 years old, spent 15 years of her life with me. She was my companion. She was the person that welcomed me home and was happy to see me. We went for hikes together. She traveled with me. I adored Keisha. And just a sweet, sweet dog disposition on top of it. We would get compliments all the time that she would just walk up to anybody or anything, probably get bitten and attacked by other dogs because she just had no clue that everybody shouldn't love her. Which leads to some interesting times when she would hop into bushes and meet a skunk, a mother skunk with babies, and get sprayed in the face, and there we are for 6 hours that night in the bathtub with tons and tons of tomato sauce trying to get that smell off of her, which doesn't work, by the way, if somebody tells you otherwise. The one story I'll tell about Keisha is that there was a time I visited my parents in New Jersey, and in the middle of the night, Keisha kept waking me up to go outside. So I would trudge down the steps and take her outside, and she would just lay down in the yard. I'd look at her and go, come on, will you go to the bathroom so I can go back to bed? And she would just lay there, and so I would yank her back in or pull her in or just convince her to come back in the house. And within half an hour, she was scratching at me again. So I'd take her back out, and she would do the exact same thing. She'd lay down on the grass. This happened 3 or 4 times during the night because you never know what the dog's going to do if you actually don't let them go outside. So the next day, I was talking to my parents and saying, she was acting so crazy. And by the way, it smells like somebody was cooking out all night last night. And my dad said, oh, well, you know, we're near the Pine Barrens. The Pine Barrens are on fire. And all of a sudden, it hit me, oh, you know what, she smelled that. And her goal was to get us out of the house. And so all night long, she kept trying to get us out of the house. Well, that's important information because about 3 years after that, I was in an apartment fire, and my bedroom was underneath the studio apartment, and the fire started right where the staircase was underneath it. Because of Keisha, I got out of the house. She woke me up at 2 a.m. I got the animals out, and I'm alive today because of her. Obviously, I still get choked up. Imagine then what it's like years later when she is suffering with old age and it's time to put her to sleep. Imagine that decision, how painful that can be for somebody to say, I owe my life to her, but yet I have to take hers in order to love her well. That is part of our calling when we love creation, isn't it? gosh, I always think I'm not going to get choked up over that. But I think that's important because when animals are properly ordered in our lives, it's not that we don't love them, and it's not that we won't do silly things for them, but it is that we understand that part of loving them is that responsibility that at times you do put them down, or at times you make decisions for what is right and a wise steward of those things. So I think that's really important. So right after my husband and I get married, we go on our honeymoon, we come home, and my husband says, Julie, I'm going to take you to go get your wedding present. Great. We get in the car, and I'm envisioning diamonds and jewelry and all kinds of things, and we pull up in front of PetSmart. So I look at him and said, you seriously are not getting another pet, are we? And he goes, oh, come on, just come inside. Now, I am the animal lover out of the two of us, so it is surprising that we're in front of PetSmart. We walk inside, we go back to the birds. I never wanted a bird. We go back to the birds, and we stand there, and I'm like, what, we're getting a bird for my wedding present? And he goes, well, you love animals, Julie. I thought we'd get two lovebirds to symbolize our marriage. All right, now how can I be upset at that? So I'm like, okay, I get two lovebirds. I can't sleep with them. I can't cuddle with them. Why do I want two birds? So sadly, well, fortunately, I should say, there were no lovebirds at PetSmart that day, which is very good because when we talked to our vet about it, the vet said, oh, lovebirds are terrible birds. They fight all the time. And I said, well, I wouldn't want that to symbolize my marriage. So we came home with Rocky, who is up in the left, and Rocky was such a fun bird. Who knows it? Now, I'm really going to sound crazy talking about this, but he was such a delight, and as you can see, he gives kisses. He would walk around the house. We would at times put him on Keisha's back, and he'd walk around the house on her back. So, again, very interesting sights you would see in the Lowe home. Shortly after that, we got him a partner, which is Sunny down in the corner. Rocky began going to work with me. I work as a counselor at CCEF. He would go into work and kind of be a therapy bird, and he would hang out with us, and he'd fly around the office, and Ed Welsh would always come up and poke at him and try to make him mad. And when I go to work, actually, it was fun. He loved being outside of his cage, so I put him on the steering wheel, and he'd sit there on the steering wheel as I was driving to work, and he'd be singing and chirping, just happy as could be. And you can imagine what kind of picture that was for people driving by or stopping at stoplights. They ended up being such a delight. So they're small birds, and they're fun, and I enjoyed them. And because of that, I began dreaming bigger dreams about therapy pets, going, wow, this is such a great idea. I should get a bigger bird as a therapy pet for the office. So Julie begins researching bird rescues, which there are many out there, believe it or not. And don't go on petfinder.com if you have a problem like I do. Most people get banned from shopping websites. I get banned from petfinder.com because then I want to bring home a llama and a pig and all kinds of interesting animals. So we go on a bird rescue. We end up finding a Senegal parrot named Mingo. Very sweet bird. We were looking for a mellow bird, a bird that I could take back and forth to CCEF with me, that would be good with people and friendly and engaging. He was living in a foster home, so we were able to get insight into how good of a bird he was, how loud he was he well behaved. Brought him home, and Mingo decided he absolutely adored my husband Greg and flew to him and would sit on his head and would just loved him, which in essence meant I was the enemy. So Mingo, every time I would try to pick him up, he would attack me and he would bite me. And one day, pretty badly, who knew a bird could do that, but my fingernails were all ripped up and I was in the bathroom running cold water under them as they're bleeding, crying, going, my therapy bird hates me. I need therapy because of my therapy bird. So here we had this bird, I didn't know what to do with him because he didn't love me. He wouldn't let me pick him up. And so my husband said, well, let's just get rid of him. No, we can't get rid of him. That would be terrible. So my husband said, so you got a therapy bird that you can't use for therapy, and he hates you, and now we're going to take care of him the rest of his life. You got it. Exactly. Exactly what's going to happen. This is Braille. Braille is what they call a double dapple dachshund. There's that for a mouthful. When Braille was, who knows, probably 8 months to a year old, he was thrown out of a car onto somebody's lawn, and the woman picked him up and took him to the SPCA. Braille was born without any eyes. Actually, he had partially formed eyes, and so when he went to the SPCA, they cleared it out and sewed his eyes shut. And he's also 75% deaf. So for all intents and purposes, he doesn't hear anything except for the sharp, piercing sound of perhaps another dog barking. So Braille ends up at SBCA in Delaware. You can imagine here's this broken dog. Who is going to want it? It's probably going to get euthanized. A fireman was walking through one day and took notice of Braille. This fireman had a sister who was a Channel 3 anchor in our area. He told her about Braille, and a little while later, Braille becomes a human interest story, and he is on the 5 o'clock news going out to thousands of people, and who happens to be watching the news that night but me? So I'm dialing my husband's number, calling him, going, Greg, we need to get this little blind deaf dog. He needs a home. He's going to be euthanized. Can we get him? And Greg, rightly so, says, are you out of your mind? We have two dogs, two cats, we're adopting two children, we just got married. That is the most ridiculous thing I ever heard of. So I hung up the phone going, okay, he's probably right. At least I tried. That night he came home and he had found out what SPCA Braille was at. He had called them and he put us on a waiting list to go visit Braille. And I said, that's why I married you. So we went to visit Braille a couple of states away, and there was a long list of people who were showing interest. So apparently I'm not the only one out there who's willing to take a blind deaf dog. And as we were leaving after visiting him, he had just had his eyes sewn shut. He had this little cone on his head, so he looked like Stevie Wonder trying to bounce around. And he kept getting it stuck on the grass because he was so low down to the grass. It was just so cute. So we go to leave, and there's several people behind waiting to see him. And the woman at the counter says, well, would you guys like to fill out an application for Braille? And I said, well, we don't need to. He's going to get a good home. That's all we care about. And she said, but we like you. You have children. You have pets. You would be a good fit for him. I said, you like me? Okay. I started filling out the application. And there's my husband again behind me just shaking his head. So 2 weeks later, I get a call from the SPCA saying, Julie, we really would like you guys to have Braille if you're still interested. We think it's a good fit for you guys. And I call up my husband again going, we won Braille. And my husband says, you do realize we didn't win the lottery. You do realize this is a blind deaf dog that you're getting. So we go and we pick up Braille, and as we're driving home and he's sitting on my lap, we're asking questions that we probably should have asked 2 weeks ago, like, how do you housebreak? Is he housebroken? And how do you housebreak a blind deaf dog? And how do we train him? What do we do now with the blind deaf dog? Well, we get home and Braille proves that he is going to be our teacher. And within 24 hours, he is learning the layout of our house and can make his whole way around the house virtually without touching anything. He has a phenomenal sense of smell. Most dogs do, right? But when you have very few senses and he's missing two major ones, imagine how much more his sense of smell was. So we would try all kinds of things like hiding in the bathtub and hiding in closets, and there would be this dog finding us. His little nose would track up in the air, and his little pink nose would be sticking out from under things. He would play tug of war with our other dogs. He would hide bones and treats and be able to find them in the closet. He did everything a normal dog would do, but for some reason we thought, why would he be normal? Very, very soon after we got him, and again, this was a dog that was friendly to everybody, but very quickly, Braille became very bonded, especially to me, but bonded to our family. And when friends and people would come into our house, within seconds, he recognized that it was a strange smell and actually began to get a little aggressive and would bite people because they weren't his pack. So we have to be very aware that now all of a sudden he is identified with us, we're his pack, he's not identifying with others. But what stands out to me in all that is Braille's two senses were smell and touch. So he could smell us so amazingly well. We could walk in the house, he could be sleeping in our bed, which is usually where he would go when we were gone. He would go to our bed, curl up on the bed. And that's another thing, he would jump on and off couches, he would go up and down stairs. How's a dog with no depth perception do those things? He would not be limited by his disability. So we would walk in the house, and within 30 seconds to 2 minutes, you would see this little dog with his nose in the air come out, wagging his tail like this, looking for us. He could smell us from the other side of the house. There are times when I'd be out in our yard before we had a fence, where I would be out watching him so that he wouldn't go out in the road or go off to somebody else's yard. And I would sit there, and I began just having these pictures of how Christ sees me. And I think, yeah, I wonder if Braille knows I'm out here still. What if he knows I'm watching him and looking out for him? And Braille became this picture of God's care for me, that here I am in my humanity and brokenness and my own blindness and my own weakness. And if I can care for this little broken dog as much as I do, how much more does the creator of the universe care for you and I? His brokenness, his inabilities reminded me of my own weaknesses and inabilities. The way he adapted to his disabilities and was so incredibly normal in so many ways. The way his Braille attached to us, and you could not be sitting on a couch or a bed without him right on top of you. You could not be cooking dinner without him sitting on your feet because he wanted to be near. His sense of touch was he wanted to be present and around you and always on top of you. He would crawl up on my husband while he was doing work at the computer because that's how he knew he was close to you. I thought over and over again, God, thank you so much for this broken little dog because it has shown me so much more about your character and goodness than I could have imagined. He was a gift to me. And I realized that, Lord, if I can feel this way, again, about this broken little animal, I can't possibly fathom how much you feel so much more for us as humans, as your image bears. And that's a really important point that I think we see the image of God enhanced in us when we care for creation, when we rightly order it and we care for creation, that we can marvel at creation because it causes us to marvel at the Creator. When we have pets we love and they point me to a Creator who loves me, that's a gift. Let me just say that it was about a year and a half ago that we had a house fire and we tragically lost all of our pets, including Braille. Oh, aw, that's terrible. including Braille, yeah. So obviously I still get choked up about it because it was such a tragic. It's not like it was putting Keisha to sleep and having to make a hard, painful decision, but you see it coming. It was all of a sudden, all the things you loved, including your pets, were gone in one heartbeat. And you know what, for months and even up to this point, it's still hard sometimes talking about it because you realize people think you should get over it. You know, it was just a pet. It wasn't your kids, which is true. It wasn't my kids, which would be so much worse. But they're just pets. You can replace them. Go get another. We hear all kinds of insensitive, minimizing things, as Mike Emlett talked about today, that you should not say to people. But I wrestled even internally with, maybe there is something wrong with me. Maybe I did care too much about them. And we can see how pets have meaning. They have personalities. We relate to them. It's a part of creation we relate to much differently than any part of creation, right? We can engage with them differently. They do take on meaning and value to us in ways that are good and right. And of course, that can be corrupted as well. But I would argue that part of losing a pet is part of losing a piece of creation that God also uses to demonstrate his goodness. And that is so important. So would we be faithful in the way we care for pets, and even understanding that the loss of them is part of living in a broken, fallen world that reminds us of those things. So that said, I need to let you guys go, but I'm happy to answer questions, or you can stick around, whatever is helpful. Anybody have any questions? Yeah.
I have a 12-year-old son who lost our pet 3 years ago, and he's an only child. So he definitely feels like that three-legged Jazz was his brother.
Yeah.
And struggles with the belief that we will see Jazz again in heaven. And he says, well, when will I see him? Well, when you pass, well, then I want to die. And so he's like, I want to die so I can go to heaven.
Yeah.
So just, can you give us some advice about, not only, obviously, we all obviously love pets, but how to speak to a child, or how
do
you speak to your kids?
Yeah, my kids, I mean, that was tough. And our kids all responded differently to it. One of our sons was hurting, but he wasn't acting like it. Instead, he was saying things like, well, I'm glad the pets are dead, because now we don't have to take care of them anymore. You just want to wring his neck when it says stuff like that. And then we had our little guy who was 3, who his way developmentally of making sense of it was he would repeat it every hour. Braille died? Yes, Braille died. Buddy died? Yes, Buddy died. Mingo? Yes, please stop talking about it. But he would say it over and over, because developmentally, you know, that age, they're making sense of it, so they're saying it over and over again. Then you had our oldest, who was 12, who just grieved and grieved and grieved, because she's very much like me. And it is that opportunity just to talk about loss in general with kids, that God knows our hearts. He knows what we love. And it is hard to lose it. And one day God will make sense out of those things. And the world is broken. And this is a part of brokenness. So it was this broader category of, and all of us know that we experience loss usually first when we lose a pet, and how grievous that is, but how it's also just the start of many other losses kids will be learning. And so that is such an important time to start talking about how God redeems loss, and that sometimes it's just sad, and I don't have to pretend like it's not, and it's not wise to just go out and replace the pet before somebody's grieved. So I'm not sure that answers your question. Yeah. Any other thoughts or comments?
Yeah. Kind of tagging along that, I have adults ask me, you know, since I'm in counseling and I've gone to lessons, that, you know, they believe their pattern, their dog will be in heaven. And they ask me, you know, why do that? You know, what do you think? And, you know, I tell them that I believe that whatever it takes for us to live in a perfect harmony and joy will be in heaven. That's how I kind of skirt the issue. I don't think animals are souls, but I sometimes get pressed on it. Do you have any?
I was desperately trying to avoid that question. I don't know. The animal lover in me wants that to be so, but I don't know. I mean, heaven is going to be far more beautiful than we can imagine. And this is where I think we need to paint a more vivid picture for children in general, or people in general, of how wonderful heaven will be. So I kind of hold that lightly to say, boy, I would love to see that to be true, but I don't know. So I usually avoid that. Yeah.
I haven't actually read it myself, but I heard of a book called Cold Notes at the Pearly Gates.
Yes, yeah.
And so I think it talks about scripture. Have you read that?
You know, I just read a commentary on it, a book review, and somebody actually was not giving it a good review, but people have strong opinions on one side of the fence or the other, so I don't actually know much about the book. I just remember recently seeing that. So, yeah, there are lots of opinions about that, and I kind of refrain from one, partly knowing my own desire is that all my pets will always be around me in heaven, but who knows. Any other thoughts or comments? Yeah?
Have you since replaced your pets? Or not replaced, but yeah. Do you have
pets? Oh dear, yes we do. Yeah, and it's interesting because, there is a mix of emotions of am I replacing, and how would Braille feel to know he's been replaced, which is a silly question to even ask, but it just points to the emotions that we go through when we go through loss. So we have since adopted several pets. One is another blind dog who doesn't have any eyes, and we're currently training her as a therapy dog. So even just ways in which God's able to use what we're doing now. And it's just a mix of emotion. Yeah, how do you grieve the losses, but also keep moving forward and see God and marvel at creation in the midst of it? Yeah, so thank you guys for coming.